It's now time for Cannabis Talk 101 with Blue, Joe Grande, and Mark and Craig Wasserman, the Pot Brothers at Law. We're the world's number one podcast for everything cannabis.
Take a hit, get lit, and sit back and enjoy Cannabis Talk 101 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Make sure you check out our IG pages for the daily news, learn the script, and learn more about our personal lives on all of our Instagram accounts at Cannabis Talk 101, at Pot underscore Brothers underscore at underscore Law. You can follow my big brother at Waslaw Dog. Blue is at One Christopher Wright. You got Big Joe Grande at Joe Grande 52, and I'm at Waslaw. And today, you know, it's just me, Mark, little brother, the Was. I am here holding it down. Big brother, Joe, Blue, they're out there somewhere social distancing and being safe. But today, I want to talk about words. You know, what's in a word? You know, some call it semantics. But words mean things. Words matter. And I want to talk about the word cannabis. You know, it's such a great word, cannabis, but it has been demonized through the years, through the decades. It has been demonized by other words, slang words. We talk about a guy named Harry Anslinger back in 1930 when he became the director of what is now known as the DEA, but he wanted to create a negative stigma in and around the word cannabis because he wanted it criminalized. So we have terms like marijuana and weed and pot. And, you know, I've done it. I've said, you know, a few times, weed, pot, you know, but I really make an effort to not say it, you know. My co-hosts, they throw it around. My brother's the worst. Weed this, weed that, weed, 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 weed. It's cannabis. Cannabis. Why, during my segments of When Cannabis Goes Bad, if you haven't noticed, I'll use the word cannabis all over the place because I replace the word marijuana, marijuana, the negative word, I replace it with cannabis. So start doing that. You know, when people use pot, weed. Weed's something you pull right out of the ground. It's a weed. It's gross. It's a weed. Cannabis is a beautiful plant. It has so many great properties and medicinal values that we can use and utilize. Cannabis, just listen to the word. Why would you even want to ruin it with something else? Cannabis. You know, it's just bliss. It's bliss. It's cannabis. Cannabis. What a great word. Let's go through some of the slang terms that we hear, you know, slang names for cannabis that have evolved over the decades and things that I personally, you know, don't like to hear. You know, we've already, you know, pot, weed, you know, they call it 420, ace, airplane, alfalfa, Alice B, Toklas, alligator cigarettes, aloe vera, amnesia, Angola, ashes, asparagus, astroturf, Aunt Mary, baby, babysitter, bag of bones, bomba, bombalacha, bang, biggery, black Bart, black gunion, blaze, blonde, blue sage, blunt, boo, bobo, bush, boof, boo-boo, bama, boom, broccoli, bud, Bernie, butterflower, butterweed, cabbage. It goes on and on. I could go down the list in alphabetical order. Check Wikipedia out yourself. Let's not use that terminology. Let's all universally use cannabis because we want to, again, change the stigma, break the stigma. It's all in a word. When somebody says, what's in a word? It's all in a word. It matters. Words matter. How you say it matters. And especially as we are fighting against this crazy war on drugs, which started back in the 30s because of a guy named Harry Anslinger. Harry Anslinger is the man who orchestrated the war on drugs, the war particularly on cannabis. And we are going to get into some of that history when we come back right after this break. Welcome back to Cannabis Talk 101. I am Mark Wasserman here by myself today because my co-hosts, my big brother, and Blue and Joe Grande are out having fun, social distancing with their family, and staying safe. And we're here talking about pretty much the history of the war against cannabis. And we talk about Harry Anslinger. Harry Anslinger ruled over the Federal Narcotics Bureau, which was a precursor to the DEA, for more than three decades. He was the first to head the Federal Narcotics Bureau. And it was a formative period that shaped the United States drug policy for years to come. Now, John McWilliams explained it best in his book about Anslinger called The Protectors. And if you want to learn all about Anslinger and how this man basically created where we're at still to this day when it comes to the negativity of cannabis, check out the book, The Protectors. Anslinger was the Federal Bureau of Narcotics, McWilliams writes in the book, The Protectors. During this time, he implemented stringent drug laws and unreasonably long prison sentences that would give rise to America's prison industrial complex. So not only did Anslinger create the war against cannabis, but he pretty much created the big business, which is now known as prisons today. Because of Anslinger, millions of lives were swept up in the drugs. Sorry, tongue-tied here. It gets me so mad when I go over this stuff, just thinking how one freaking man just destroyed this beautiful plant. So because of Anslinger, millions of lives were swept under the drug war's dragnet if they just weren't outright ended. He destroyed lives. But Anslinger wasn't so much a war on drugs as it was a war on culture and an attempt to squelch the radical freedom of the jazz age for the people of color. That's right. This guy was a racist pig, and he was using cannabis as a way to destroy minorities and their culture because he was a xenophobe. And he had no capacity for intellectual nuance, and his racist views informed his work to devastating effect. But he couldn't have done it alone, right? He couldn't have done it alone without a cast of complicit politicians who shared his bigoted vision for what America should be. Wow. Wow. That was in the 1930s. Sounds kind of familiar. What are we dealing with here in 2020? And a maniac who's the president, but people are being complicit, other politicians who are backing him up. So the more things change, the more they stay. You have, let's see, he's appointed by President Hoover. Anslinger's appointed by Hoover, and he quickly aligned himself with astute judges, with influential politicians, Washington insiders, and, you ready for this, who did he align himself with? The pharmaceutical industry, whose support saw him through a series of scandals in the coming years. He lined up with the pharmaceutical industry. Very interesting. He's bashing cannabis, turning it into just something that is going to be outlawed while forging alliances with the pharmaceutical industry. So during the early parts of his career, Anslinger seemed little concerned about marijuana. Back then, it was known just as cannabis. But, and here's the big but, when alcohol prohibition ended, it looked as though Anslinger might be out of a job. So he sought out a new threat to the American way, essentially manufacturing a drug war. Now, if you look at the book Chasing the Scream, The First and Last Days of the War on Drugs, Anslinger's office was focused on cocaine and heroin, but they were relatively small in numbers in terms of usage. In order to ensure promising a future for his bureau, which would become the DEA eventually, he needed more. Marijuana was Anslinger's golden ticket. That's how he saw it. He used his office to trumpet the association between weed and violence so that it could be criminalized. He would say, "You smoke a joint and you're likely to kill your brother." He made all sorts of wacky quotes and said just irrational, insane things that people would listen to. And from the beginning, Anslinger conflated drug use, race, and music, put it all together, saying things like, "Reefer makes darkies think they're as good as white men." Things like, "There are 100,000 total marijuana smokers in the US, and most are Negroes, Hispanic, Filipinos, and entertainers." Coming after Filipinos, don't do that. My wife, my kids are Filipino. He would go on to say their satanic music, jazz, and swing result from marijuana use. The marijuana causes white women to seek sexual relations with Negro entertainers and any others. I mean, to me, it's boggling that the vast majority of Americans bought into this bullshit. But they did. They did. And as they go on in this book, Chasing Dreams, they say jazz was the opposite of everything Harry Anslinger believed in. It was improvised, relaxed, free form. It follows its own rhythm. And for Anslinger, worst of all, it is a mongrel music made between European, Caribbean, and African echoes, all mating on American shores. To Anslinger, this was musical anarchy and evidence of a reoccurrence of the primitive impulses that lurk in the minorities waiting to emerge. He said it sounded like the jungles in the dead of night. And this is how he would continually perpetuate and get out to the American people the correlation that he was making up between cannabis. This is when cannabis effectively became illegal. 1937. 9 years later, Anslinger started going after musicians by trying to block union membership of those who were convicted of these drug crimes, these stupid, peddly little drug crimes that now men and women were carrying convictions on their backs and they weren't able to get into union. The lives of jazz men, this is what Anslinger would say, reek of filth. Arrests involving a certain type of musician in marijuana cases are on the increase, he said. And he wrote this in a letter to the American Federation of Musicians. And in a hearing with the Ways and Means Committee, Anslinger repeated, "I'm not talking about the good musicians, but the jazz type," which is a direct attack on the colored musicians where jazz populated. And over the coming years, Anslinger would have a decisive hand in all of the country's drug legislation, including the Boggs Act of 1951, which required mandatory sentencing and various state laws further criminalizing drug use. So we talk about mandatory sentencing and what they started implementing. It started back then. Then, as time goes on, administrations change. Nixon appears in 1971 with his own war on drugs. And here we have a quote from the Nixon campaign in 1968 and the Nixon White House. After that, he says they had two enemies, the anti-war left and black people. But he knew he couldn't make it illegal to be against either the war or black people. But by getting the public to associate the hippies with marijuana and blacks with heroin, and then criminalizing both heavily, he could disrupt those communities. He talked about this. He said that Nixon did. Nixon had a bunch of outrageous quotes that he would say over the years. Here's one, dear to my heart and my brother, you know, and I quote, it's Nixon. We're quoting Nixon here. It's a funny thing. Every one of those bastards, they're out there for legalizing marijuana. Every one of those bastards is Jewish. What the Christ is the matter with Jews, Bob? What is the matter with them? I suppose it's because most of them are psychiatrists. Now, I don't know if that's a spot on impression of Nixon, but that's what Nixon said back then to his White House chief of staff, Bob Haldeman. Now, we learned a very, very eye-opening quote back in 1994 from John Ehrlichman, Nixon's former domestic policy advisor, who said, as he was being interviewed about this whole situation, the war on drugs, Nixon's feelings about it, Anslinger, all of that stuff. He says, you want to know what this was really about? The Nixon campaign in 1968 and the Nixon White House after that. And this was the quote that I just paraphrased for you, talking about two enemies, anti-war left and anti-war and against the black people. And he said he knew they couldn't make it illegal to be against the war or to be against blacks. So they heavily criminalized marijuana and heroin, and that would lead to the arrest of the leaders, raids in their homes, breaking up meetings, and vilifying them night after night on the evening news. And here's the most just disconcerting part of this quote. He says, did we know we were lying about the drugs? Of course we did. So they knew back then that it was all a bunch of complete bullshit. But they were racist pigs, and they went out and did these heinous, horrific things that perpetuated the hate and the negative stigmas about cannabis. And this is where it all started. And it just continued, as we said, through the 70s, because of Nixon here, and during the 80s, Nancy Reagan, just say no, was also compared with race-based media hysteria about crack cocaine. Now, you know, obviously crack cocaine ain't cannabis, but they were still relating all sorts of drug use with minorities. So just the bullshit has to end. Over the course of the next 20 years, the number of drug offenders, and I should say nonviolent drug offenders in US prisons multiplied 12-fold. The draconian mantle was picked up by George H.W. Bush, Clinton, and pretty much remained the status quo until we got Obama in there, who began pardoning and commuting nonviolent drug offenders back then. But then what happens? 8 years after Obama, Trump gets in there, and who does he appoint as the first attorney general? And that was Sessions, Jeff Sessions, the little elf who said, good people don't smoke marijuana. So from 1930 to today, we still have it, and we are still dealing with it. This is one of the reasons, and thank you, Blue. Shout out to Blue for creating Cannabis Talk 101 more than 5 years ago, when he was offered an FM radio show to be urban hip hop based, to really tap into where he came from as a rapper in his younger days. But he said no, you know, he could have made some easy money. He could have got in there and become even more popular, probably doing this FM radio show the way they wanted to. He said, no, I've got this idea. I've been around cannabis my whole life and it's got to change. And I want to bring education to the world about cannabis. So thank you, Blue, for creating Cannabis Talk 101. This is our platform where we can bash Anslinger and Nixon and everybody else who jumped on that horrible of lies, deceit, and destruction to try to bring down cannabis. And guess what? Cannabis ain't going nowhere. Here at Cannabis Talk 101, we're going to make sure of that. We'll be right back, and I'll have a little more to wrap up about what's in a word called cannabis after this break. Welcome back to Cannabis Talk 101. Mark and Craig, Pop Brothers at Law, Blue and Joe Grande. And this is always my favorite time of the show when I take a moment to thank those that help us do it. Pitt, Peanut, Jennifer, Elvis. Man, we couldn't do this without you. You put everything together behind the scenes, make us look and sound so good. Happy holidays to our great, fantastic crew. And I want to take a minute to thank my co-host. You know, I just talked about Blue, and he created this whole show. And my big brother who has, I have a performance background. I have a background in theater. And so when we first started doing this 5 years ago with Blue, it was more natural for me, I think. But my brother jumped right in there. He's a great debater, a great talker. Smart as hell, and so proud to see how far he's come along with his hosting abilities and getting out there in front of people and doing it. And of course, the incomparable, the immeasurable, I won't say it, but I'll think it, Joe Grande, big Joe Grande, who came to us, I think almost 2 years ago now, maybe a little more, something like that. And it was happenstance how he came to join us. He was actually booked as a guest on the show when we were back on FM radio because he was doing processing, credit card processing for the cannabis industry. He came on the show and lo and behold, him and Blue were like, hey, we know each other from back in the day. Because, you know, you may know Joe from Big Boys Neighborhood, Ryan Seacrest, Fox, NBC Sports, and a whole slew of other radio and TV gigs he did for decades. And he had retired from it and moved out to beautiful Orange County where he lives in, you know, that Richie Rich area with all the housewives and everything, and decided he was going to come on our show to promote his new business. And Blue said, hey, why don't you join us? And, you know, there's a kind of funny story about that, but we can talk about it another time. But bottom line is, Joe Grande came in, took what we had at Cannabis Talk 101, which was a great show, but took it, tweaked it, brought in his 20 some odd years of experience in radio, and just took it to the next level, which is why pretty much a year or so after Joe joined us, we launched on iHeartRadio, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcast. But more importantly, we partnered with iHeartMedia, becoming the very first cannabis talk show, all cannabis, strictly cannabis, nothing but cannabis. Well, we'll talk about some relevant, important current events as well, but becoming the first cannabis-based talk show to partner 50-50 with a major media conglomerate like iHeartMedia. And we launched 420-2020 at 4:20 p.m. in the midst of a worldwide pandemic. So we've stuck it out. We've stuck it through. We started remote. We were supposed to be over at the iHeart Studios, the iHeart Theater, with a huge, huge launch party. But hey, we were happy just to get on the air. And now we're heard in over 103 countries, and we are spreading the gospel that cannabis is not bad. Cannabis does not create criminals. Cannabis can I believe, save the planet with the hemp it creates, with all the different cannabis products, the THC, the CBD, the CBN, the CBG, and I could go on and on about all of the wonderful things about cannabis. But I'm going to wrap it up now. Thank you for joining. This was Mark Wasserman, little brother of the Pop Brothers at Law, holding it down for Blue and Joe Grande on Cannabis Talk 101. And remember this, nobody else loves you. We do.
Thank you for listening to Cannabis Talk 101 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.